Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, September 12th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10 minutes or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this Tuesday edition of the show. That is our Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah. Again, just went ahead and recorded a full show with him. Why not? I mean, we have so much to talk about here in college football week three, a lot of different things that we discussed, and Cheetah's one of the best, one of the sharpest out there, so always a joy to talk with him. Couple things before we get into that segment with Sports Cheetah. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of content. I've got my college football power ratings up, opening line report for both college football and the NFL, a look at the BMW Championship. That's this week's FedEx Cup playoffs event for the PGA Tour. Tons of game previews that we're going to be rolling out. Also some NHL team previews. Parker Michaels, a new writer for us over at bangthebook.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Creature, K-R-E-A-T-T-U-R-E. Brilliant hockey handicapping mind. Very, very smart guy. Very lucky to have him over there at bangthebook.com. So we're going to get team previews from him. Also some stuff as we get into the season. So if those that are looking for some NHL content, we're going to ramp that up for you here this season. We're very excited about that. Don't forget about those contests that are going on over at bangthebook.com. Our daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, cash prizes available for those. Good luck to everybody that signed up for the Bang the Book Super Contest. Hopefully you got off to a better start than what the field got off to in the Super Contest. I touched on that a little bit at the end of the segment with Cheetah, but we'll talk more about the Super Contest here on Friday this week, including my plays for week two. Hopefully they go a little bit better than week one. One more thing to mention here before we get into that segment with Cheetah, that is that over at DSI Sportsbook, you can use the promo code BT and the number 25 to get a $25 free bet just for signing up. So test drive, check out the site, check out the mobile site, all that good stuff. See if you like the way the live betting is set up. If you do, if you decide to deposit over there at DSI, a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino if you decide to add some funds over there. So a 200% deposit bonus with a $25 free bet. One of the best promo code offers, if not the best promo code offer out there in the industry. That is BTB and the number 25 over at DSI Sportsbook. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. All right, talked about a ton of different things with Sports Cheetah here regarding week three of the college football season. So we're looking forward to that. Here is that segment with Sports Cheetah. All right, I'm joined now by Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com for this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Cheetah, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate your time, as always. I don't hear any clanking silverware or any kids laughing at the beach or anything like that. So I take it you're back to the full-time grind there?
Yes, back in Las Vegas. Got back Friday night. Actually, I had to drive through. I mean, I'm sure this storm was pretty pansy compared to what's happening, obviously, in Florida and other places. But it was actually kind of scary. And all the flights going to Vegas got canceled on Friday. And a friend of mine that was actually flying in was waiting on the tarmac for a few hours. They finally just canceled it. He had to come in Saturday. So I got a little piece of the weather action, which, you know, amazingly enough, another week now we're going to have a ton of implications because of the weather. And not only just the South and Florida, but maybe the Midwest come this weekend. And so it'll be interesting. You know, there's already, like, right before we hit record here, the UCF Georgia Tech game was canceled. We already had the Miami Florida State game at least postponed. And so I'm intrigued, I guess, to see where a lot of these numbers are going to go and how the weather's going to affect them again.
No, you know, this is crazy because, like you talked about, now the storm heading up toward the Midwest. We kind of touched on that on Monday's show as well, where, you know, it's too far out to make any concrete determinations in terms of the forecast, but there will be some games affected. And obviously we've had a bunch affected in Florida and then Texas as well. And it's going to create some very unique betting angles because this isn't a situation that we've seen before. I mean, you look at a team like Florida State, for example, they're going to have 2 weeks off. They're going to have played their first game against Alabama, then have 2 weeks off before they actually play again. Same thing for Miami. They played once, now 2 weeks off for them as well. Central Florida, 2 weeks off. This is really unique, and I don't think, obviously, it's a great situation for any of these players involved because you get ready to go, you get ready to start the season, you start the season, and it's not like they're practicing. I mean, they haven't even been able to do that. So I'm kind of curious to see what happens with these week four numbers. Obviously, we're looking way ahead here, But with the week four numbers with these Florida teams that have been off for 2 weeks.
Yeah, actually, you know, Central Florida is a good example. I'm not sure how the market will really, you know, assess it in general, but, you know, I thought that was way too high. It might just be because Georgia Tech's looked actually pretty good for 2 weeks, even though they did lose to Tennessee and they were down a little bit early against Jacksonville State. Their quarterback, Marshall, I think he's a freshman. He's going to be fine running that option at Georgia Tech for the next 4 years or whatever it is. They're really good offensively, and they've, I think, shown that. So maybe it had to do with that a little bit, but I thought plus three was really high. Central Florida is a team that gets steamed basically every week anyways. So we took plus three yesterday, last night. And, you know, sure enough, it's been canceled now, but my number was pick. And so I was curious about that too. You know, how much stock do I put in a team that didn't get to play, probably didn't have a similar practice schedule as normal, and the routine gets shaken up a little. I figure they were at home. It helps, right? You know, in this case against Georgia Tech, it helps probably for, you know, for Memphis, UCLA, they're at home, they're in Memphis. They haven't had to deal with it too much, even though they had a game get canceled themselves. So, you know, it was the Central Florida game actually last week against Memphis. And so it'll be interesting to see if there's really much of a showing in the market in, you know, how much, I guess, stock people put into it ultimately.
No, I agree. And I had that, no, I had that game pick as well. So I was a little bit discouraged to see that one canceled, but, you know, who knows how that game would have played out anyway. And that would have been a really fascinating game to talk about. And that's why I had it on the sheet here, because you've got that UCF team that plays very, very fast. Scott Frost wants to push the tempo as much as possible against the Georgia Tech team that wears you down, runs a triple option, controls the ball, controls the clock. That would have been a really good stylistic matchup to talk about. And I'm, obviously there are, you know, more important things going on in the world, but I am a little bit disappointed that we can't touch on that one.
Yeah, I think it's okay. I mean, we can all admit that, I mean, we're all seeing less football and it stinks. Like, I mean, the Memphis-UCF game, hopefully they can find a way to make that one up, since I think it could have implications for both teams winning, you know, the divisions and going to the AAC title game. But some of these that are just going to get canceled that are non-conference games that ultimately don't really matter. I guess there may be some teams that are like five wins on the fringe of a bowl game at the end of the year with it, you know, like Georgia Tech potentially, that obviously could have used a game around pick, you know, a coin flip that they, now that they're going to miss out on as far as getting into a bowl game. But I think it's fine to admit that we're all a little disappointed. We're not going to see the football in the competition, but at the same time, obviously we all understand what's going on over there, and, you know, safety first. And I totally get it.
All right. So we're in week three. Now we talk about big overreactions from week one to week two, still some overreactions out there from week two to week three. And also if we've seen bad performances in weeks one and two, you know, we see some reactionary lines in week three as well. So overall, Cheetah, in terms of looking at the market, I know we were talking a little bit yesterday. You thought the Bet Online openers were a little bit better here this week than they were in week two. But, you know, are you still seeing a lot of really good opportunities out there in what continues to be an inefficient market?
Yeah, there were still some Bet Online openers that I hit. You know, week one, I don't think I hit quite 20. I'll pull it up here. I had marked it in my phone, but I think it was probably at least 15 and maybe up to like 18, something like that. Yesterday, it only ended up being four, eight of them. So they definitely did a better job as far as that goes. And I think it's almost one of those where you wonder if Dave Mason or whoever else is over there running things at BetOnline got pounded in week one and they're like, okay, we got to hire someone else, and just got someone. And week two, all of a sudden they were way better, because it was a pretty drastic jump, actually, in my opinion, as far as how close to, you know, the straight power rating numbers they were compared to that first week, which, or I guess when we're talking about the first week, we mean week two. But anyways, I think there's still plenty of opportunity. Like I said, I hit eight there. I ended up, I think, betting six last night that had settled in at Chris and Pinnacle and everywhere else, you know, in the evening. And I think one of those got canceled, obviously, with UCF. But so I have five others that are pending. So there's still some value out there. I'm going to have a couple ads this evening, and then probably toward the end of the week after I gather up some info and really break into every game and matchup and scheming that I like to do throughout the week.
You know, I was kind of talking with Kyle Hunter on Monday, and I want to touch on a couple of these games with you as well, where we've seen what appears to be some fairly significant overreaction out there in the marketplace. This Wisconsin-BYU game is one that certainly stands out for a variety of different reasons, and BYU did not look good again against Utah. Utah got steamed in that game pretty heavily, and, you know, the Holy War winds up going to the Utes once again. That's three straight weeks without good showings for BYU. And, you know, now we're starting to see what the carryover effect of that is, because this line here against Wisconsin this week, you know, while I'm certainly not racing to back BYU, this is a number that looks too high.
Yeah, well, I mean, the number even went up 3 points today. I guess Tanner Mangum's going to be out, or potentially, you know, had an injury. It was really weird. I watched the whole game. I saw him go down like the very last play of the last series and kind of limping off the field when the game was over. Utah took the knee. They won by six. I didn't realize it was actually serious. I was too upset about the direction BYU's offense is going in general, playing like it's 1956. And they were going fast up-tempo spread. They switched to pro style, which is like the opposite. Everyone's going to more tempo and spread. And so now they're just like playing this offense. I mean, their defense is so good. And they held Utah, whatever it ended up being, 19 points or something, but they held them to 19 and like five field goals. They kind of have a nice bend, don't break type, you know, philosophy, wait for you to make a mistake, forced a couple turnovers. But their offense is just so bad. So I get why everyone liked Wisconsin or why the number was so high here. But once he went out, I mean, he got up to like, is it still 16 and a half? I think I have it way lower, but it's one of those where can I actually rush to back them again. But from a pure number standpoint, it's definitely high. And I think in the end, at 16 and a half, if this touches 17, which is the 16 and a half set, Chris, I think everywhere else it's off the board. If this hits 17, I mean, at that point, it's too high. It's too high anyway at 13 and a half. And maybe the backup quarterback can, you know, bring some sort of spark to the offense that's needed. He's a little more mobile. Maybe they can utilize that to some extent. And honestly, Wisconsin's good, but laying 17 on the road in the altitude, which they never play in, with I think it's their Big Ten opener against Northwestern, who's probably, despite the Duke game last Saturday, the second best team in the division still. That's a pretty good spot to back BYU anyway. So it's one of those where everyone will yell at you if you backed BYU and they, you know, they lost against Utah. Granted, BYU covers a lot of the 3, 3.5, 4, 4.5, 5s if the kicker, who I actually know pretty well, doesn't miss a 26-yarder. And then the Utah kicker went 5 for 5, all from outside of, you know, 30. So that the little kicking variance there actually is what cost BYU a cover. They should have probably covered it anyway. So I think it's definitely an overreaction. I agree. It's BYU or nothing at this point.
Well, that's a really important thing. And I want to harp on this point because I think it's a good time to do it. It's not enough to look at the final scores. You have to look at how the games played out, why the final score came in the way that it did. And that's an excellent point that you just made, that BYU realistically should have covered this number. And, you know, I mean, very easily, if a couple of things go in a different direction, you know, I mean, they probably could have found a way to win this game. That being said, I did watch some chunks of it. I was very impressed with Tyler Huntley, very impressed with what Utah's doing with that new offensive scheme that they're running with the offensive coordinator from Eastern Washington. So I did adjust Utah up in my power ratings here for this week, but it is one of those things where, you know, a lot of people just feel like BYU is untouchable at this point. And it's the thing that we always talk about when it comes to the sports betting market. You want to look to buy low and sell high. And I don't know, I mean, maybe if BYU gets blown out again this week, or not again, but if BYU gets blown out this week, maybe you get an even lower point to buy on. But this feels like one of those buy points. It's just hard to do.
Yeah, especially with the way it sets up and with Wisconsin now traveling. I think it's their first road game of the year, on top of the fact that it's in altitude, like I said, Big Ten starting up for them. They've had two pretty easy wins. And honestly, they couldn't really manhandle Florida Atlantic like you would expect them to. They didn't manhandle Utah State until Utah State started making a bunch of mistakes in the third quarter, setting up Wisconsin for points, and there was a really weird swing in that game. BYU's really stout. They're really good defensively and especially good against the run. Wisconsin, that's their thing. It's going to be really – like, I don't know if Wisconsin's scoring more than 24. Can BYU score 7 to 10 and, you know, push on a 17 or win if they score 10? Probably. So I definitely am looking at the BYU side. I'm just curious to see, one, you know, what the situation is for Tanner Mangum and the quarterback. And I also need to talk – I still know a couple of the assistant coaches there that I can – find out a little bit more about the backup quarterback. They're usually pretty honest with me. And, you know, if they're like, oh, we're doomed, I mean, they'll be honest. They're not very biased in that regard. If they're like, oh, the backup is going to be fine, he's done well in practices, this and that, you know, they're not just talking out of their butts. So I'm going to find out a little more about this game. And I think, though, a lot of us are going to buy BYU. And it's one of those where it's just, you know, it is what it is. If Wisconsin somehow just trucks them, then so be it. But you gotta, like you said, buy low, sell high, and this number is definitely too high. And you know, it's probably the BYU side that's, you know, the buy low.
And there's one more game to look at in that same respect. Actually, a few more, but we're going to talk about a couple of them a little bit more in depth. But this Oklahoma State Pitt game is one that's been lighting up on the odds screen a little bit here today. Oklahoma State's now more than a 14-point favorite at Greek, at DSI, at Five Dimes. It's heading that way at Pinnacle as well, as we're recording here on Tuesday evening, or Monday evening, excuse me. This is another one of those. Pitt, you know, doesn't look all that great against Youngstown State. Looks very bad last week against Penn State, in a game where Penn State had a ton invested in that game. They wanted that game badly. As much as James Franklin kind of dismissed it after the game, you know, that was a game that they really wanted. And here's one of those where Pitt's played bad the last 2 weeks. Oklahoma State's looked very good the first 2 weeks. And this is the reactionary move that you get.
Yeah, well, the Pitt Penn State game is very misleading. Well, I don't know if it's misleading. They were minus two turnovers. They still covered most of the numbers, unless you bet it like right before the kick. I think it was 18.5, which is what the second half line was, which I actually bet and lost on a half D followed by a field goal off the punt kickoff thing, which I can tell you more about later because it was a weird beat. But the reason I bet it, and the reason that I think the box score and the score is misleading in general, is, you know, Pitt outgained Penn State at halftime. They had outgained them by 3 times the yards. They had run 45 plays to 15 or 16 plays for Penn State. Pitt was grinding. They were running the ball. They were wearing down the Penn State defense. You could see it at the end of the second quarter. And sure enough, both times they somehow found ways to just stall and kick field goals. So they only had 6 in that first half. And the Penn State touchdown came off an interception from Pitt. So it was like, it was a dominated half by Pitt, yet they were down, I think it was 13-6. Or no, it wasn't. Maybe it was 16. I think it was 16-6 or something, 17-6. It was 17-6. I just realized. Okay, so 17-6. They're down 11, made the number 18.5 because they were plus 7.5 second half. I thought Pitt was actually really, really good. And this is another one where I think everyone, now granted, I was been low on Oklahoma State the last 2 weeks, so maybe they're just actually legit. Mace Rudolph, Washington, everybody on that team has looked phenomenal. And so, yes, maybe they are just being undervalued, and that's why everyone's steaming them up. But if Pitt controls the game like they did against a really, really, really good Penn State offense, and that was on the road, they're going to control tempo and wear you down. If they can do anything similar, and I honestly, Penn State's run defense is better than Oklahoma State's. Pittsburgh should be able to run and wear down Oklahoma State to an extent too. I actually kind of like the Pitt side now over 14 in a game that I think should be more like 10. So definitely getting some value, I think, on Pitt, and definitely go back and look at what's it called? The box score, sorry, for that Penn State game, and really compare second half Penn State kind of, I think they had like a 70 or 80 yard play that caught them back up in a lot of those, but I'm pretty sure Pitt still outgained them overall in the game, a lot more first downs. A lot of the things that when you lose by 19, you don't think could be the case, especially on the road against Penn State, but Pitt was surprisingly good. I actually am really intrigued to see how they play or attack Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I have this number 11.5, but that's because I made an adjustment to the Pitt side because of the way that line moved against Penn State, where that was a number that just kind of kept climbing a little bit, sort of had a little bit of buyback on it there towards the end. But you know, that was one of those games that just kind of kept going throughout the week. So I figured I'd make a little bit of an adjustment to Pitt, and I still have this game below where the number is, especially now that we're seeing this much action early on in the week. So I guess the follow-up question to all of this then is, is this a true position? Is this a move to massage the number and come back on Pitt at a higher limit? What do you think? Because I have to think a lot of sharp players, you know, like you, do have this number a little bit lower.
Well, it's interesting today. It was 14.5, like when I woke up at 8 a.m. So what is that, 6 hours ago from when we're recording? So it's Monday, 8 a.m. It moved to 14.5. It got bought back down to 13, and now it just, as we're doing this at 1:45, got bet back up to 14.5 again. So I wonder if there's just kind of two groups that are battling it out or something. And, you know, there's the side that's just betting Oklahoma State every week, which, you know, I can't blame them. And then there's the side that, you know, probably where I'm going to end up being, saying, no, this is too high and Pittsburgh's going to, you know, be able to control the tempo to a degree, you know, keep Oklahoma State's high power offense off the field like they did against Penn State, and barring some mistakes like a pick six and another turnover, a safety, a punt kickoff safety thing that they let Penn State run all the way back to the 30 to kick a field goal to blow that cover in the second half. I mean, they made so many mistakes. Otherwise, they were going to be right in there to maybe even win that game outright. So, I lean with the Pitt side for sure here at 14.5. I'm not so sure there aren't two people that are kind of battling this out that have some sort of influence on the market.
All right, now one thing that you did talk about in that Wisconsin-BYU breakdown is that Wisconsin's got the Big Ten opener coming up here against Northwestern, and we've got some of those look-ahead spots here this week. I know UCLA is in a big one. They play Stanford next week after coming all the way out to Memphis and playing a noon kickoff. So you've got some of these look-ahead spots out there. The Big 12 starts conference play next week, so a lot of their teams are going to be getting into conference opponents. So how do you incorporate that? Do you have a quantifiable value that you put – into your projected spread for the look-ahead spots or the letdown spots, or do you just sort of keep those in the back of your mind as you're handicapping the game?
Yeah, I think you can do it either way. I mean, I keep everything in the back of my mind, or when I'm about to make a bet or look at one side or the other, I know what's coming up. A good one that, I think Iowa is one that, I talked about Wisconsin. Iowa's one, they're off that crazy come from behind twice victory against Iowa State. They're playing just lowly North Texas at home. And then if I recall, Iowa plays, I'll pull it up while I'm talking, but they have one of their key Big Ten opponents on the road after North Texas. Sure enough, that was 24. Yeah, they play Penn State. Yeah, they host Penn State. So they go from this letdown, not letdown, but a potential letdown spy here against North Texas off that huge win against Iowa State, come from behind rival. Penn State, maybe their toughest game, for the next 2 months till they face Ohio State toward the end of the year or Wisconsin. It's a really good spot to back North Texas. So those are worth something. As far as like an actual number, I mean, I usually will just like kind of add a point one way or the other just for the sake of my number. But if I really think it's a good spot, it's probably worth more than a point to the North Texas side. Sure enough, 24 was actually maybe a little short, and North Texas got hit today. It's down to like 20.5. So, and then it got bet back up to 21.5. So there's definitely some group out there that hit Monday morning that was pretty confident that the Iowa spot was worth, a few points for sure. Bet it down to 20.5 before maybe some of the numbers guys out there played back on it. So yeah, I'm not sure if there's a certain quantifiable number for per situation. And this one, like a nice sandwich spot, and then on top of coming off of a huge win, on top of it being a rivalry, come from behind, crazy win late. It definitely adds up to be a significant spot. So you kind of just have to keep them all in mind as you're going through and handicapping.
The Wisconsin one, they have a bye before they play Northwestern. The reason I went and checked is because I wanted to check the Northwestern game against Bowling Green here this week, because I sort of figured, they're in kind of a unique spot. Now, you probably take the look-ahead factor out of the equation with a bye week, I guess. But, you talked about Northwestern at the top of the show here a little bit today with that surprising loss to Duke. I mean, it's surprising that they lost necessarily, because that game was sitting around 2, 2.5, 3, 4 throughout the week. So it's not like it was a massive upset by any means, but they lost by 24 points. They got soundly outgained. They looked really bad in that spot. So in a situation like that, yeah, they've got Big Ten play coming up. They play at Wisconsin and then Penn State. So two huge Big Ten games right out of the chute there. But are they in a bounce back spot? I mean, is that something that you look to quantify?
I don't know if you quantify bounce back, because, I mean, technically they struggled against Nevada at home in their opener and had to come from behind to win in their game at home in the fourth quarter against Nevada as 24-point favorites. So, I mean, the bounce back spot was supposed to be against Duke, a team that isn't supposed to be, like, better than them. I bet Northwestern pick, actually, and had never had a chance. I was more impressed with Duke then maybe I am down on Northwestern. Still, I still think Northwestern's a good team. But Duke, I think, showed us a lot. I mean, to score that many points on Northwestern and then only hold them to, I don't know if it ended up only being 10 total. They may have scored one more time after nobody was paying attention to the game anymore. But I think the bounce back spot would have been this game. And sure enough, they lost by 30 anyway. So I'm not sure if you can really quantify that. This is a double bounce back, maybe, hosting Bowling Green now, a team they're supposed to beat, but they're supposed to beat Nevada too. Bowling Green's coming off a pretty bad loss. I mean, they weren't very big favorites against South Dakota, an FCS team at home, but they, last I saw, they were down like 22. I think they ended up maybe losing by 2 touchdowns, 15 or something. So for Bowling Green, I mean, they got to try to gain some pride back too of themselves. the look, I'm definitely not worried about it. Look ahead to Northwestern and not Northwestern, excuse me. Wisconsin coming up, but there's a bye week in there. I think you mentioned too, but when you lose it that badly and in embarrassing fashion, you don't care who you play the following week. I mean, Bowling Green or Alabama, like you just need to be focused. And I expect head coach Pat Fitzgerald, I believe, and company obviously to have Northwestern ready to play. So if you wanted to back Northwestern, that I guess doesn't hurt, right? All that stuff kind of adds up to, helping your cause if you wanted to back them. But for me, the number's 23. For me, the actual spread's 22. So it's not really low enough or enough value in the number that I'm going to be playing it unless it probably came under 3 touchdowns.
All right, before we get into some of these in-depth game breakdowns, I did get a listener question here as we started recording, so I just want to throw this your way. I promise you it's not a hard one, but at Schlags1 on Twitter says, can you ask the Cappers how they keep record of their plays? They have a searchable database, old-school notepad. I want to be better at analyzing my plays and where my strengths are, and keeping a detailed record is where it starts, which that's a very good point to make. I mean, you absolutely want to have detailed records, breakdowns, closing line, point closing line value, all that kind of stuff. So, Cheetah, how is your database set up for keeping track of that?
Yeah, it's different for a few different things. It's a lot of the work actually every week. A lot of the hours that people just don't even realize. And so, like this listener particularly is probably realizing how valuable and important it is and that it takes a lot of time. And most people just probably don't even care, but it probably costs some money long-term, So it's a good question. That's what I was getting at. And it's two different ways because for me, since I sell picks at Wager Talk for a few years, there's data there where I can just go on the back end for any play I've ever released and I can just pull it up and it shows if I won or lost, what the number was. And, as far as going back and looking at in tracking closing line value, I have to do that on a separate site. But I can at least see what I've released to clients in that way. So I can, people ask, what was your something record for this league at, past one or two or three seasons? I can just look it up there for myself because I am tracking a lot of closing line value. And then on top of the fact, I'm actually betting even more stuff outside of what I'm releasing. I hit some of the bet online openers. I'm betting a lot of props. I have some other sharp guy stuff that I trade with that I'll just bet, that I'm not allowed to release to anyone else. It's one of those things where I just have so much that's in play every week that I have to just keep it all, organized. So I just do it via Excel. I have a doc that, by week that just has every bet that I made. And I can track everything there, win, loss. It's also just in the actual account you're betting in. Even though I'm in Las Vegas, I don't bet a lot of over-the-counter ticket stuff other than yesterday I went to the Wynn at 3 p.m. to hit their openers because they'll take 2,000 a game. But outside of that, I basically use the apps or offshores or credit shops, et cetera, to get down. So it's pretty trackable that way where you just have accounts that have your history too. I try to keep it all on an Excel doc so I can analyze it and break stuff down, and I use it honestly, and you have to track the closing line stuff because you have to use it to adjust your numbers to bet the following week, or really in this case after Saturday night I'm doing it all so that Sunday morning I can wake up and be good to go and start betting into the openers, whether it be Bet Online or Win or Chris or Pinnacle. So
now obviously you're keeping track of the bets specifically, both sides, totals, futures, props, all that kind of stuff as well. Do you split it down into home favorite, road favorite, neutral, all that kind of stuff too? Or is it mostly just, here's what I played, here's the closing line value?
Oh, yeah, I definitely don't do that. That would be mostly probably pointless, but also way too much time than I have. So, yeah, I definitely don't do that. It's just by play I have sides and totals, so I have a separate split for that because they are two different kinds of plays, but definitely not really looking for when I'm betting on home teams or dogs versus favorites, or because for me it's all whether they're home or away, a favorite or a dog, the point value and closing line value and all the numbers are all the same. So I definitely don't take the time to differentiate every possible type of bet.
All right, well, let's look at some of these specific games here. We'll kind of carry over some of these same concepts that we've been talking about. Let's go to Friday night here and talk about Illinois and South Florida. South Florida now up to a 17.5-point favorite. And again, we'll see if this game is actually played. I mean, every indication I've seen on Twitter is that this game should go off as scheduled. The Tampa area didn't get hit as hard, I think, as they had originally expected to. But again, we'll see how things play out as we go throughout the week. But South Florida has had a couple of uninspired efforts so far, I would say. 17.5-point favorite. Illinois is not a very good team. But, you know, still, there's some intrigue to this game, I think.
There is. I mean, it's moved up. So it opened 14 at the win yesterday, and that was one that I bet because my number's 19. And, you know, maybe I'm a little bit down on Illinois more than I should be, especially after the way they handled Western Kentucky. Although I think that's more indicative of how big of a drop maybe Western Kentucky is taking after losing the head coach. And I'm pretty high on South Florida, and maybe I'm not, you know, as down on them as I should be with Charlie Strong and looking, like you said, uninspired for 2 weeks. Then they had the game, or they got a game off, and then now they're playing this one basically with a bye week. So that helps, and they're at home. Hopefully it gets played. I don't know if there's going to be some sort of news because it is South Florida on top of it. But 14 was short, so I bet that. And my plan was to take back if it got above 17, which it already has. So I'm just going to have $2,000 on each side and just kind of free roll the whole, not quite free roll, but you know, have a pretty good shot at a middle. So, because for me, I don't think I know yet. So that's the answer to your actual question, what you're getting at. Illinois may just be better than I was expecting, or I was hoping. South Florida maybe isn't as good. Maybe Charlie Strong just can't figure stuff out anymore and they don't respond well. So for me, I think it's another game to just kind of wait and see. And I use that term a lot, or phrase a lot, because, you know, I bet the 14, I'm not forcing a bet there because I was pretty certain it was going to come up, but I'm definitely not going to take a full position on it because I'm not a positive, like which side, which team is what. And especially I think South Florida, I still think Illinois is pretty bad. They got outgained, you know, by Ball State. I think they needed a couple, one or two, maybe a kick return or a punt return to score to really just actually even win that game. So they probably should have lost the opener. And then Western Kentucky just looked like they had no clue. And maybe they're just really, really bad. So for me, I'm still leaning towards the side that Illinois isn't good, but South Florida is still a massive question mark. So I'm not going to get involved in the game as far as having too much on one side or the other. And yeah, it's one that I think we'll gather more info or data, I like to say, you know, just from this game that we can use for weeks 4, 5, 6, and so on.
I think that's a really important point to make for our listeners here, is that you don't have a strong grasp on the game, but you thought at the win getting the 14 was a good numbers grab. And then you put yourself in a position to wind up with, you know, what's going to amount to a middle where hopefully the game lands on 17 for you and you wind up hitting both of them. But, you know, that's one of the differences of being a better versus being a handicapper, is, you know, isolating an edge like that where you know that you're probably going to have a chance, you know, to set yourself up with a nice middle. If you wanted to drink the juice and buy out, you certainly could if the number didn't go where you expected it to. But, you know, that's a really important point to make, and why it's so important to be able to try and get openers if you can, because you can set yourself up for some of those opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. I'll give you one more example. I have no clue what to think of Baylor. I mean, I even had some plus 600 on Saturday and it cashed. They might be just really, really bad. I saw today, I knew Solomon's been benched for Zach Smith, I believe is the quarterback's name, the backup. And so maybe that'll help them. But Duke looks so, so good. And I think Duke maybe is good, like a lot better than we were at least expecting going into the year. But I mean, laying 2 touchdowns to Baylor, like that's nuts, right? Even my like heavy adjustments on Baylor now 2 weeks in only had this like 6 or 7. But I had nothing to do with this. I did not want to get involved, but sure enough, I'm at win. I'm in line the second time because you can only hit 5 at a time. And I had a few more I wanted to bet, and Chris opens up as I'm there in line, and at win, it was 11. So I was like, okay, well that's still high. Like I said, I think it only should be like a touchdown spread. You know, Baylor couldn't be this bad all of a sudden, and Rule's such a good coach. Like, eventually they're going to figure this out. Well, then Chris opened at 14. So that was another one where I had no clue. I did not want to get involved in the game, but I ended up betting minus 11 at the win and plus 14 at Chris offshore just to have another kind of I call it like a 20-to-1 shot. You know, I'm risking 200 in juice to win 4,000, and you know, hope, or maybe if it lands 11 or 14, I go 1-0-1, and you know, tie or push one of the bets. But that was another one where, you know, if you don't have, you can play numbers still, even if you don't have an opinion on a game, and you know, you still give yourself some advantages or edges that add up over time, especially when you're doing this with a lot of volume and you're doing it for, you know, a living to an extent. You're making your, you're paying your bills with the income from this, then you have to try to take advantage of every opportunity you can.
Yeah, I'm looking at this one at Bet Online right now where it's 14.5 actually with a limit of 2,500. So, you know, again, I mean, you set yourself up for those opportunities to get those middles, to make those smaller edges eventually add up into bigger edges. And that's pretty much what you're doing there with that Baylor Duke game. And that was actually one that I wanted to talk about because this does feel like that classic overreaction, similar situation to the BYU situation in that Baylor lost to Liberty, didn't look very good, lost to UTSA as a big favorite. And that was a spot where people were kind of buying Baylor back a little bit, sort of saying, okay, you know, this line's maybe a little bit of an overreaction. Turns out that maybe Baylor isn't that good. But Duke, with that win over Northwestern that we talked about earlier in the show, all of a sudden they're getting a ton of respect. They blew out NC Central, who is a decent FCS team, but not a great FCS team. Again, these are the opportunities that you want to look for out there in the market. You know, I have this one in a similar, I think I only have this one 4 actually, but I need to make another adjustment to Duke because in looking at Duke, you know, Daniel Jones last year was a freshman, played really well, got a ton of experience. He's been even better this year as their starting quarterback. So yeah, maybe Duke is good, but they're not 14 points, you know, better than Baylor at this stage of the game, I don't think.
Technically, no. Like, at this stage of the game is the perfect phrase because it's only week 3. This is the problem. I was so impressed because I bet Northwestern, and I was their bounce back spot because they played so crappy at home in the home opener against Nevada. Duke is really, I have this weird feeling they're really good. And like, no one's expecting it. I'm trying to like look for ACC, like coastal futures, because maybe Miami's not going to be as good. You know, Virginia Tech could obviously get beat. UNC stinks. Pitt's not that good. Like, Duke might be this weird, like 50-to-1 that has a chance. So this could be like, if it was played in 7 weeks, you could go be looking back and be like, oh, you know what? Yeah, Duke should be laying 2 touchdowns against Baylor. But this early, like this stage of the game, like none of us are thinking that because all our numbers say this is way lower. So this is a really crazy line to me. And it's one where I'm very intrigued to see, one, where the market goes, but two, just how it finishes. You know, if Duke wins this game by like 28 or something, then I think it's telling for both sides. I think Baylor is that bad. I think Duke is that good. It'll be kind of this like a combo where, you know, you get a third week of data on both of these teams. That's probably at that point, you know, not a coincidence.
So maybe to you, it sort of sets up like the 2013 season where Duke wound up going to the ACC title game. They played Florida State. Now they got their asses kicked, but they won 10 games that year. And it came legitimately out of nowhere. They were 6-7 the year before. So it pretty much came out of nowhere with Cutcliffe. And it's not a predictive thing, obviously, because it was kind of a one-off year. But still, it sort of feels like one of those things where Cutcliffe has done this before. And it really, I guess, wouldn't surprise me if he did it again.
Yeah, you know what? So I have a doc here, if you just don't mind giving me like 30 seconds, where, so when I update my power ratings every week, I update them and it automates it in a schedule that actually gives me a new like projected spread for every game that's updated based on the new power ratings and a new projected like season win total for those. And so I'm curious now how many games I have Duke winning. I haven't upgraded them a ton because, you know, the game, I think I did like a point because of, based on the closing line where I had it versus close. But I have a feeling I like in a week, like I said, this is another one for me where I'm just going to see how they play against Baylor. But Baylor, then this team might be like 3 or 4 points better than anyone's had them. And, you know, after Baylor, you know, they go on the road against North Carolina as a rivalry game. Then they host Miami. We're going to learn a lot really fast. They host Florida State, which is like their next toughest game. They don't have to play Clemson or Louisville probably at this point without Francois, maybe the two best teams out of that division. So they just have this weird shot. And my wins, my projections still only say 6 wins. I was curious. It used to be more like 5. So not quite, but you know, if I upgraded them, say 3 or 4 points, then they maybe are pushing like 7 wins, 7.5, and maybe 1 or 2 upsets in there. And then, yeah, you have like a 9 or 10 win team again, and maybe a chance at getting them in the ACC title at 40 or 50 to 1. I'll have to see what the numbers are. So I'm intrigued by Duke. Definitely a cool game to follow this week.
It is, and I also think it's cool to follow from the Baylor side, too, with that quarterback change to Zach Smith, who was supposed to be the starter coming into the year. They picked up a new Solomon as a transfer, and then when it was announced that he was starting, I was pretty surprised. I mean, I remember back to the Five Dimes quarterback, starting quarterback props that were out there in week one. I want to say Zach Smith was like minus 250 something. Don't quote me on that, but I feel like he was, you know, pretty big chalk to be the starting quarterback here. And then all of a sudden they went with a new Solomon, and I kind of went, wait, why? What? You know, it was one of those things where you just kind of didn't get it. And now I'm curious to see what happens with it. Like, this feels like a game that not a whole lot of people are going to care about. It's a two-touchdown spread. You know, it's going up against UCLA-Memphis, going up against Oklahoma State-Pitt. But it's one of those games that really stands out in a handicapping context.
This is, yeah, definitely, as far as handicapping, like, this is – like one of the best just to like look at and really break down in your head. I'll tell you this because I had a lot of questions. It helps because we won a bunch of them, but I had a lot of questions Saturday and Sunday of people asking me, because I post all the Moneyline dogs that I bet Friday night for the Saturday games. I just posted the last 2 weeks on Twitter. So you can go look for them. If you're a new listener or haven't followed me, go check it out. But people are like, why did you bet 12 Moneyline dogs in week two? But I thought there were a lot of spots where, in a non-conference situation in weeks one through three, I do this, and there's a lot of spots where I think the game, even though the spread is this, is a lot like this, meaning, say, Baylor, Duke is 14. There's a lot more variance within the game because it's non-conference. It's early in the season. We don't really know a lot about each team potentially, especially if there's some weird perceptions based on the previous two games, i.e. Baylor or Duke, where like this is a lot closer to maybe like would anyone be surprised if Baylor won outright? Like, not at all. Like, everyone would be like, oh, okay, Baylor's back. Zach Smith did pretty well. And Duke just, they careered it against Northwestern, played their best game of the year. And then that's that. And Baylor's like plus 450 on the money line. And this is like, yes, technically they're 14-point underdogs. So it's not a coin flip, but it's kind of like this weird high variance, like wide variance bell curve thing where they win outright way more often than plus 450. And so I did that with like a lot of like UTSA was actually one. That's why I bet plus 600 against Baylor. There was a few other like Boise, Washington State. Boise ended up choking it away and costing me a bunch of money. But Washington State, like the way they play, so gimmicky, Mike Leach, air raid, a lot of passing. Like they're either winning that game by 30 or losing outright. And no one would be surprised. And Boise was plus 350, you know. So there's a lot of these games early in the season where I think there's a good opportunity to do that. And as you were kind of even talking through the Zach Smith stuff, like that's a big variable that isn't really being handicapped more than maybe a point or two in the spread, which is only a few cents in the money line. Whereas Zach Smith could just be really, really good, and then Duke really isn't as great as they looked against Northwestern, and Baylor wins this game, and it pays 4.5 to 1. Like, so that's one where I'll definitely be betting Baylor money line, and there's going to be some others, but that, I thought that was a good example to bring up for people that were asking me over the weekend that'll probably tune in to the show. That's kind of my intention with a lot of these, and Baylor's will definitely one to look at.
No, I think that's really smart. I think it's a great way to approach it. And it doesn't surprise me because I've told you this before off the air, and I'll tell you on the air, I think you're the sharpest guy out there with the way that you're able to find edges out there in the market, use them to your advantage. You know, even when you sent me a DM about the Corey Kluber wins prop that PropSwap had up, I think it was, over 15, something like that. You had a really good chance of it either pushing or hitting. And, you know, that was one of those things. It was only, $400 or $500 scalp, something like that. But still, I mean, that's still a significant, you know, amount of coin to pick up for something that looks like it's very likely to happen. And I think being able to find all of those edges and all those opportunities out there is something that just suits you really well. I think that's what you're speaking to there when you talk about taking those money line shots on the dogs.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words, Adam. The Indians one, I obviously wanted to run it by you because you're watching the Indians every single day, but I just thought it set up nicely. For people that don't know, he had 13 wins. There was a over 15 wins prop that was posted, I guess it was like a week and a half ago now, on PropSwap here in town. And so I think it was a $360 ticket. So I bought it, and you know, if he pushes, I get my money back essentially. But if he goes over 15, then I get to cash the ticket, which pays $660 or whatever. So I think I was in a good spot. I ran it by Adam to find out, but I've only done that a few times. Lamar Jackson was another time, and I almost did on an NFL ticket and luckily didn't and saved money. But a few times they have these weird props they'll put up, or even sides or totals for games, you know, within the same week that offer you an edge or some advantage. And like Adam said, and I know people that are too cool for touting or for betting or for even letting anyone know who they actually are, like trolls on Twitter, it's only $360 or whatever, but that goes a long way. You know, that pays for groceries for my month or something, you know, hopefully he wins. And I know he won his first one, so I just need one more win at least to push. So yeah, that stuff's definitely, I think, it's helpful. But for me, I guess, you know, logical is not the word that's correct. It's mandatory almost. I guess that's the word I was trying to think of. Like when you're really just trying to do this and live off of it and live a comfortable lifestyle, you got to take advantage of every couple hundred you can. And that's why it's, one, a full-time job, but two, it's kind of stressful too during, you know, football season and basketball starts up, and you know, that's a lot of work.
I thought they pulled that ticket down. They still let you buy it? I thought they weren't taking offers anymore.
Oh yeah. I didn't realize you never knew I actually bought it. Yeah. Sorry. I thought you knew I did. Yeah. They pulled it down and I messaged them directly and said, hey, I do want to buy it. And I made a counter offer and they said, oh, we pulled it down. I said, well, I'll buy it for what he had it up for like an hour ago if he wants to sell it still at that price. And he said, okay. And so I actually did get it.
All right. Well, he's got 15 wins. And at Bookmaker and DSI right now, he's -417 on Tuesday night to pick up number 16. Well, I mean, the Indians obviously are -417 to win, but that would, you know, certainly make him a big favorite to pick up the win in that game. So hopefully he'll be able to
realize. I didn't realize he won two already since I bought it. I thought he only won one. So I'm actually already at 15. That's good. We should be set. Nice.
Yeah, you've already got a push, and then he's over a $4 favorite on Tuesday. So hopefully you'll be able to get that one and take care of that one. All right, let's get back to the college football stuff here. LSU and Mississippi State. This is one that we threw onto the card here because Georgia Tech and Central Florida got canceled. And that was a game that I was looking forward to talking about. But I'm very happy to talk about this one, too. You know, Mississippi State is a team. I know I messaged you in the preseason when I was going through my power ratings and saying, you know, hey, do I have the Bulldogs power rated correctly? Is this about where you have them? And you know, we wound up sort of being on the same page with it. They're catching 7 at home against LSU. It's a pretty big SEC West game. I think it's going to kind of serve as a barometer for, you know, what may happen going forward in the conference.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, I'm still – it's interesting. LSU looked so good against BYU, and then maybe BYU's offense is just that bad. And I was really, really wrong about BYU, but maybe not actually wrong about LSU, who looked good, obviously, against them shutting him out. You know, Chattanooga, the stat against BYU was BYU didn't cross midfield against LSU. Chattanooga scored some points, crossed midfield like 8 times. Like, Chattanooga was in, you know, the game last week. Maybe LSU wasn't really caring as much about that matchup mentally, obviously, and, you know, prepping that week. But, you know, that maybe LSU isn't as good. And, you know, Mississippi State's a team, like you said, that you were high on. I liked him in general. I loved watching him. It was actually coincidentally the first time I really watched a full Mississippi State game outside of the first one of the year against South Alabama, where I had South Alabama. But they played BYU, and they took them to overtime, and Provo scored 50-something points, I think. Maybe that was the Toledo one, but yeah, this is a lower-scoring one. But they took him to overtime, and BYU ended up pulling it out. But I was like, you know, this is a freshman quarterback. I said Mississippi State's going to be really good next year. And this is one where my number's pretty close. You know, even though I'm down on LSU, it's not one where I'm probably going to be backing Mississippi State. It was a little low, actually. We're open 6.5, and I just saw, actually, for the first time, it's up to 7 almost everywhere. So I don't disagree with the move. But I will say I backed Mississippi State last week. It was more of a Louisiana Tech fade, who I don't think is very good. And then it actually ended up moving 8.5, like through the 10, I think, up to 10.5. So it's pretty significant. So I don't know if that was people expecting the same with Louisiana Tech just not being as good this year, or if actually people were buying the Mississippi State train. Maybe Mississippi State's just taken that leap and they are going to be, you know, a really good team this year and even in the SEC against top tier talent and athleticism. So I'm very intrigued by this game. I don't imagine I'll be playing them or LSU for that matter. But it's one, I think for the sake of my win total bet on LSU, I'm rooting for Mississippi State to pull the upset.
Yeah, this should be a really good game for a lot of different reasons. I mean, you look at these two teams last year, Mississippi State lost 23-20. So LSU picked up the home win. Mississippi State had 1.8 yards per carry in that game, and it was still a 3-point game. And I think something that doesn't get enough play here in the SEC, particularly in the SEC West, is that Mississippi State has a good defense year in and year out. Dan Mullen does a hell of a job with that side of the football. Now he's got that dynamic quarterback in Nick Fitzgerald, a la Dak Prescott. There are some similarities between the two, certainly. And that just makes this such a fun game to handicap, because I feel like I want to back Mississippi State in spots like this against non-Alabama teams at home. I mean, they've even played fairly well with Alabama in the past at home, too. But again, this one's right on my number as well. So I don't know if maybe I look for a live opportunity, something like that. But I still think this is a really big game for, you know, both teams. I mean, Mississippi State's got LSU, then they're at Georgia, then they're at Auburn. Really brutal three-game stretch here. On the LSU side, they play this game at Mississippi State, then host Syracuse and Troy. So two very, very different schedule constructs for these two teams going forward.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it, you know, I think that's where coaching comes into play. I mean, can Mississippi State, can they look past the fact that they just have this really, really tough stretch coming up, like you mentioned, outside of LSU, but then Georgia, Auburn, and then even BYU in non-conference play before they have to play Kentucky, Texas A&M, and then Alabama. It's really tough. Can you coach them and just treat the LSU game as, you know, the next game is the only one that matters? And on the LSU side, can you really psych LSU up enough, to actually play the game to their potential, which they did against BYU. They looked really good. The FCS opponent didn't maybe look that way against Chattanooga. So maybe they're going to be back here. I think the game against Syracuse is intriguing just in general. They shouldn't be really worried about them, but the way Syracuse plays, it's kind of that really high variance, like Golden State Warriors, Houston Rockets, high variance type of play where like Syracuse goes really fast. They throw a lot. If they just somehow blitzed LSU, caught them off guard and was up 21-0 early, then that's a really interesting game to me. So they shouldn't be overlooking them, but like, and even Troy's, you know, a pretty good team. They were down one possession on the road at Boise State in week one for most of the game until I think it might have even been a special teams or a defensive touchdown for Boise put it at 11 and out of reach late. But I don't think they're games they should be looking over, and they're also not ones that they're looking, you know, ahead to either. So I think you'll get the most out of both sides ultimately, with LSU taking Mississippi State fully for who they are and what they are, and then Mississippi State obviously probably not worried about the tough stretch ahead because they know, you know, it starts with LSU, and hopefully you know both teams, and I guess coaches are probably telling them something to the nature of, you know, no matter what happens, we got to take something out of this and, you know, apply it for the season going forward. And, you know, especially for Mississippi State's sake with the Auburn, Georgia stretch and then BYU and Kentucky and Alabama. It's really, really tough. I mean, that's why I didn't end up playing the season win total, which I think we talked about before. And you were asking me about Mississippi State. And I said, you know, our numbers are pretty close. And the season win total, like, I loved them. And I was just hoping I could bet that essentially a number that meant that can they get to a bowl game. And then my numbers only like had like 5 wins for them. It's just a really tough schedule sometimes in the SEC. And then when you're playing obviously teams like BYU and even La Tech, which at the time we were only expecting to maybe be, you know, a touchdown to a 10-point spread. It's tough for these teams sometimes. So as good as they can be, and it's one of those where they'll probably have some games that get blown out against good teams, and maybe they'll pull some upsets too, and maybe LSU is one of them.
Well, this is why schedule analysis is so important, because I look at this spot for LSU, and I'm kind of hoping, you know, no offense to the win total that you're looking at, I wouldn't mind LSU beating Mississippi State very comfortably here, because I'd love to play Syracuse next week in what's a pretty challenging spot. I mean, I know LSU can line up and run it down Syracuse's throat. I'm fully aware of that. But I also feel like you said, the tempo that Syracuse wants to play with, the fact that they can go down there and free roll and know that they're free rolling, makes them a dangerous team. I think my number is like 19.5 for that game, 20, something like that. I'd be surprised if the line comes out there if LSU plays really well this Saturday.
Yeah, if they end up handling Mississippi State, my number's actually above 3 touchdowns. So let me just double check. Didn't say that incorrectly. Yeah, I have it 22. So if they played really well against Mississippi State, Syracuse obviously just lost outright to Middle Tennessee State, got steamed against really hard. You know, this could end up being 24+, and I'll probably back Syracuse, throw a little on the money line too in that game. I think that's a really strange matchup. Especially for an LSU physical team that isn't used in the SEC. They're not used to seeing that type of offense at all.
All right, let's talk about this Clemson and Louisville game here. You got Louisville catching 3 at home. There are some 2.5s out there as well. Bovada, most public book out there in the offshore market, although some people seem to think it's in Vegas. Clemson's a 3.5-point favorite there on that one. So, you know, this is a big-time heavy-hitter game in the ACC. You got Lamar Jackson, you know, reigning Heisman Trophy winner, put up some ridiculous numbers last week against North Carolina. But that Clemson defensive line against Auburn, 11 sacks, 14 tackles for loss. This is a really, really good X's and O's matchup. But what about from a betting standpoint?
You know, it was a really intriguing game, just the Auburn one in general. Auburn had really early in the first quarter 2 drives inside the Clemson 5. I think actually both times they got to the Clemson 1 or 2 yard line. Couldn't score, had to kick field goals. And at that point, at 6-0, couldn't do anything after that. And I think it was a turnover that even set up one of those drives, scoring opportunities for Auburn. So really, Clemson defense was even better than maybe it looks, because 6 is obviously really low, but one of those 3 was off of a turnover. And then the other 3, I mean, both times they had to hold him to even keep him out of the end zone. Stidham was running for his life. I don't think it was him. Clemson's defensive line just was blitzing through. I mean, they didn't even have to rush linebackers or defensive backs when they were just getting to him immediately. I don't know if this is correct, because I don't know if there's a site that does this or if someone was just counting or something. I saw there's 11 sacks, like you mentioned, but I saw 30 hurries for Stidham. Yeah. It's just insane. Like, how are you ever? No one's getting open in that and you're hurrying. And he's not really slow, but he's not very athletic either. He's kind of like an in-betweener where he can move with his feet a little. But that's nuts. Now, what's funny is now on the flip side in this game, you have a guy who's probably the most dynamic, fastest quarterback we've seen in a long time, who can probably evade the pressure. I also think they're probably going to block a little better. I don't know why Auburn struggled so much. It's maybe going to be an issue going forward throughout the season. So there's a lot to be learned, I think, in this game. And personally, you look back at last year, Louisville was on the road at Clemson. I had a big bet on Clemson. It actually moved against me a little. And it was 0-0 after the first quarter, and then the final ended up being 42-36. Lamar Jackson settled in. He got comfortable. He's on the road in his first real test. And he threw for like 300-plus yards. He still rushed for 160, a couple touchdowns. He was fine, and it was on 30 attempts, which is crazy, actually. He ran the ball so often. And it had a lot to do with, I think, him evading the pressure of the defensive line for Clemson being so good. But one thing – this is a guy that I get heat of, because I always go to his defense, and it's Chip Kelly. And you think I'm changing the subject, but I'm not. I'll get to my point in a second. But I've always said – you know, he's an offensive genius. He's obviously did it at Oregon, and what he did, he really, though, roadmapped where football is now. Like, no one was going fast and up tempo and doing it correctly until he did, and then everyone's trying to do it, and they're realizing the value and running more plays if you have an edge over your opponent. Every, you know, yard per play advantage, if you run 100 plays instead of 70 or 60, like, you're going to be that much better. So he implemented that. He tried to do the NFL, which I thought he got the most out of the Philadelphia Eagles at the time, winning 10 games twice. I'm not sure why he was fired. The Niners are obviously a mess. He didn't really pan out there. I get it. I still think he's brilliant. Well, he was in, during the halftime of the Louisville-UNC game, he was in studio as an analyst. And this is a guy I respect more than just about anybody that coaches football. And I don't care what anyone else thinks about that. But he sat there. He said, Lamar Jackson is a much better quarterback than he was last year. He said tons better than he was last year. He's way more patient. He'll sit in the pocket longer. He's making better throws. He's just more accurate. He sat there just praising the guy. At the time, it wasn't really, I don't know, I think Louisville was up just one score. But he thinks Lamar Jackson has made like another leap. And it's crazy coming from obviously a guy that just won the Heisman. But if Lamar Jackson is this good, and he already did it against Clemson on the road last year and almost led a crazy comeback, I think there was some weird play at the end where his receiver went out of bounds thinking the stick was at one part and he got the first down, but really there was like a lines judge issue. I don't know if people remember this, but the lines judge was standing maybe a couple yards from where the real marker was. So on a fourth down that was wide open around the 10 or 15 yard line, they were about to score to win the game by one. The guy went out of bounds thinking he had the first, and he didn't. He was a yard short, and then Clemson just took a knee, and that was it, basically. So he almost led that on the road, and I still think as great as a Kelly Bryant, the quarterback for Clemson, who got injured, came back in and led 2 drives to score to win 14-6. He's going to be tested. This is probably one now on the road in a revenge spot against a team that's going to put up points. Like, can Kelly Bryant really lead Clemson offense to at least 28, maybe 30 plus. I'm not so sure. So I actually like Louisville's side. The number should be a little lower too. I was surprised it came out at 3.5. It's been bet down now some. I think this is going to be the game of the week now that Miami-Florida State was postponed. Everyone's going to be tuning in. I think Clemson-Louisville is going to be a fantastic one.
No, I think you made a really compelling case there, especially with Lamar Jackson. It sort of brings another question. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of value on him to win the Heisman, but if he puts up numbers in this spot, I mean, he's very clearly going to be at the top of the list, right?
Well, it's sad. He's already at the top now. I mean, Darnold had zero touchdowns his first week, and I think he was 10 to 12 to 1, and I sat there looking at it, and I was like, that's probably going to either look like a really dumb number in a couple weeks or one that I'm glad I passed at. And sure enough, he's like 9 to 5 already. I mean, he's below 2 to 1 now. He's the favorite, and by far. And if he does it, obviously, like you just said, against Clemson, and now Louisville shoots into the mix to win it all, I picked up a 40 to 1 on him just because I think this is like a coin flip game where it's going to be 10 to 1 if they win. And, you know, if I can get 40 to 1 now, I might as well. I have to take it. So, you're definitely right. If you were ever going to bet Lamar Jackson Heisman, you should probably do it now. Although I think it's come down way too much now where you're only getting, I guess it's plus 180. I saw at Westgate. Maybe some other spots are higher, but it's one of those where maybe he's just that, not only that good and that dynamic, but he's also better last year in the way they run their offense and blitz teams that have bad defenses. And even Clemson, like really good defense, he did it last year on the road. I mean, he's just going to amount different statistics. So you have to give him that. And I'm intrigued now to see, I guess you mentioned it again, and I saw it was 9 to 5. Look at some offshores, people that put up Heisman now that the weekend settled. Maybe there's some slow movers. Maybe there's like a 10 to 1 out there still, or even maybe like a 6 to 1 if it was current last week. I'm going to take a look at that when we hang up, actually, because that's, I think at that price, definitely still a good bet.
Well, we'll talk NFL here as we record on Thursday for Friday's show with our Westgate Super Contest selection segment. Quick update on the Super Contest. A lot of people did really awful so far this week. It's 38.9% with the Monday night games pending is the overall success rate for the field. I think 8 of the top 9 most selected sides lost. The top 6 in the census lost. It was ugly. It's been a very ugly week. So for anybody out there that did struggle in week 1 of the Super Contest, you got a new lease on life because a lot of people went out there and struggled. But we will talk about that here coming up on our Friday edition of Banging Book Radio. But Cheetah, wagertalk.com, what's going on over there right now? Or on Podcast U, for that matter.
Yeah, same as usual. I have my picks up for sale if you're interested in getting those by the week or month or the season, or maybe you just want to try out a couple plays. They have a couple different options there for you. Podcast U, I'm doing the content where I do breakdowns of every game that I don't have a client, and you know, I break down, give my numbers, and really go through the matchups in more depth and detail. And I also do a call-in show that kicks off tonight, which people won't hear about on this segment until Tuesday morning. But in the future, if you guys are interested, every Monday night at 6:30, the Last Word Cheetah Show, which will be at Podcast U and at VSiN here in Las Vegas. I'm doing like, it's the first real podcast form of a call-in show, but I'm going to give it a whirl. I'm not sure how it's going to go, honestly, or how the response will be. I did a test run a few weeks back and it went pretty well. So we'll see. Ultimately, though, it's right after the weekend, Monday nights, people want to talk about the games previous weekend, the upcoming lines, obviously, that are pretty fresh, whether it's college or NFL for the next week or of games. We can, you know, throw questions at me, whatever. If you're not interested in buying picks, but you appreciate my info or anything, you could do me any favor at all. It would just be calling in every once in a while on Monday night, keeping the show alive and at least giving me some interesting topics to discuss. And, you know, you can obviously talk to me too for a few minutes on the phone, and it should be fun. I think it'll be good. I think our audience, it's younger and, you know, used to, I guess, I don't know. It's interesting because you have like the Periscope, Instagram, Snapchat era, even Vine before it went down. There, back in the day, people like used to call into radio shows. That was a thing. But maybe now doing it in podcast form at a scheduled time, we can get it rolling. It'll catch on. So that's what's going on over there, Adam. And I appreciate you having me on as usual.
Yeah, man, no problem. And good luck with that podcast tonight. Of course, again, people will hear this on Thursday or Tuesday, excuse me. But you can follow Preston on Twitter at SportsCheetah. Cheetah, I'll talk to you again later in the week, man.
Yeah, sounds good. Take it easy.
Terrific stuff there, as always, with SportsCheetah. You can follow him on Twitter. at Sports Cheetah and check out what he does with Podcast U. And also, obviously, last night had that VSiN Live Last Word Cheetah show. It's something that he'll be doing on Monday nights as we go throughout the rest of the football season here. So if you want to get involved with that, make sure that you do. You can check him out. I think at Last Word Cheetah is the Twitter handle for the show. And then at Sports Cheetah, of course, on Twitter. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. And then we'll see. We'll probably get another guest for Wednesday's show as well. Thursday, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Also, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment with Sports Cheetah. And then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with the odds report. He'll tell us where the sharp money is in both the college football and the NFL betting markets. So that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.